Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, October 17, 2020. Midland joins Texas metros in jobless jump, by Mella McEwen. mmcewen@mrt.com. Texas's labor market deteriorated in September as unemployment jumped statewide, with each of the Texas Workforce Commission's metropolitan statistical areas reporting higher rates. The Midland MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, saw an unemployment rate of 9.6%, up from 8.1%, and 7.5% higher than the 2.1% reported last September, according to the commission. Odessa saw its unemployment rate climb to 13.2% from 11.1%, giving Odessa the state's highest unemployment rate for a fourth consecutive month. Statewide, the rate rose to 8.3% from 7% in August, but is below the high of 13.5% seen in April as the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic began to be felt. Officials attributed the rise in unemployment to a declining civilian labor force as fewer Texans looked for work and the number of unemployed Texans increased. That trend was seen in Midland, where the civilian labor force fell by about 1,200 from August to 105,145 in September. That's 5,600 fewer people in the workforce than last September, when the count was 110,728. Of those in the labor force, just over 95,000 were employed, down 2,700 from August, and roughly 13,400 below the 108,432 employed in September 2019. The number of unemployed Midlanders rose by little more than 1,500 to 10,108, which is 7,800 more than the 2,300 unemployed last September. Midland's total non-farm job count has plunged during the downturn, falling 200 jobs from August to September to 99,600 jobs. That's 14,900, or 13% less than the 114,500 jobs the previous September. As expected, Midland's dominant industrial sector, mining, logging, and construction, which includes oil and gas, was the hardest hit, plunging 10,500 jobs, or 26.5% from September 2019 to September 2020. Next was the trade, transportation, and utility sector, Midland's second largest sector in terms of jobs. This sector lost 1,600 jobs over the last 12 months. It was followed by the leisure and hospitality sector, down 1,000 jobs over the year. The only industrial sector to add jobs over the last 12 months was the professional and business services sector, Midland's third largest sector in terms of jobs. This sector added 100 jobs. There may be good news for Midland workers, however. The Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, in its Texas Employment Forecast Report, noted that, statewide, mining jobs increased slightly in September after 16 consecutive monthly declines. This could suggest the oil and gas sector may be flattening after prolonged decline, according to the report. Former MISD Teacher Sues District for 2018 Incident, by Stuart Doreen. sdoreen@hurstmp.com. A former Midland ISD teacher and her husband have filed a lawsuit in federal court against Midland ISD and two individuals who served with the district's police department having to do with an incident that took place on October 26, 2018. The lawsuit states Megan Marie McMurray and Adam McMurray brought claims against the district and Alexandra Weaver and Kevin Brunner for alleged violations of the 4th and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. The lawsuit also states they further bring forth state claims pursuant to the common law claims of breach of contract, defamation, and invasion of privacy. During that 2018 incident, according to McMurray in a past Reporter-Telegram article, the MISD Police Department went to McMurray's residence and took the couple's daughter to Abel Junior High, Ms. McMurray's place of work, for questions. McMurray has said that her daughter was denied the right to speak to her parents for 4 hours while she was being interrogated by the MISD Police Department. Ms. McMurray had flown to Kuwait for 5 days to talk to a school about a job opportunity. Her husband, who is in the military, previously was stationed there but had just been moved to Syria. MISD completely turned my life and the lives of my entire family upside down for no reason, Megan McMurray told the Reporter Telegram. It is time for them to be held accountable for their actions so this doesn't ever happen to another family. MISD's police department pressed criminal charges against McMurray, and in December 2018, McMurray turned herself in at the county jail because there was a warrant out for her arrest. She said she spent 19 hours in the jail. She was found not guilty on 2 counts of child abandonment in the 142nd District Court in January. The plaintiff's complaint, which was filed Friday, is 31 pages in length. Elena Ladd, in the Midland ISD Communications Department, stated Friday afternoon, "To my knowledge, the district has not been served, making it difficult to comment on the matter." There is a demand for a jury trial, and the defendants will seek actual damages, punitive damages, attorney's fees, and expenses incurred, all costs of the court, prejudgment interest as allowed by the law, post-judgment interest as allowed by the law, and further relief. U.S. rig count jumps by 13, Permian unchanged, by Mella McEwen, mmcewen@mrt.com. Stable prices in the $40 range are encouraging some operators to restart drilling activity. Oilfield services company Baker Hughes and data analytics company Enverus reported Friday that the U.S. rig count rose by 13 to 282, its fifth consecutive increase. Reuters reported that it was the biggest increase since January. Still, the rig count is 569 rigs below the 851 at work last year. Enverus said the count has gained 13% over the last month, but is still down 61% year over year. The news service said the rise in rigs drilling for oil was also the largest since January, jumping 12 to 205 rigs. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose 1 to 74. Texas gained 7 rigs to 123. This compares to the 423 at work in the state last year. North Dakota, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Wyoming joined Texas as producing states with higher rig counts. New Mexico was unchanged at 45, and Utah saw renewed activity with 1 rig at work statewide. The Permian Basin had 130 rigs, unchanged for the week, and down 292 from 422 active last year, according to the Baker Hughes Enverus tally. Eddy County, New Mexico remained the most active in the Permian, with 23 rigs, down 2 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico followed with 22 rigs, up 2 for the week, which is the largest rise among Permian Basin counties. Martin County added a rig for 19, while Midland County held steady at 16 rigs for the week. Yoakum County saw renewed activity with 1 rig at work, and Cochrane County lost the 1 rig at work within county lines last week. Pioneer Natural Resources added an 8th rig during the second week of October after averaging 7 rigs in the second quarter, according to Enverus. Newborn Oil also increased activity, running 4 rigs compared to the third quarter average of 2 rigs. Endeavor Energy doubled its activity to 4 rigs after averaging 2 rigs in the third quarter. Taprock Operating likewise doubled its activity to 4 rigs in mid-October after running 2 rigs in the second and third quarters. After dropping to 0 rigs earlier in the year, several Permian operators have returned to action, including Burnett Oil, which activated a rig Wednesday. It's the first time since March 7 it has done so. Spur Energy Partners added a rig at the end of September after halting drilling activity in early April. City. Number of virus cases tops 4,400, from staff reports. The week ended with another 47 new coronavirus cases, according to the Midland Health Department. The new cases announced Friday brought the total number of cases this week to 268. The Health Department also reported that the overall case count during the pandemic rose to 4,000 444. The health department showed there are 1,475 active cases, 36 more than Thursday, in Midland County, and 2,646 people have recovered, 10 more. The number of COVID-19-related deaths stayed at 88. Friday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Wednesday and Thursday, according to the release. New cases reported this week: Monday, 68, Tuesday, 43, Wednesday, 60, Thursday, 50, Friday, 47, total this week, 268, total last week, 233. Crude price posts weekly gain. Friday's close is $40.88. By Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Commodity prices continued their march in a narrow path this week and managed to post a weekly gain. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange started the week with a $1.17 decline, but recovered the next 2 days, adding a total of $1.61 to the contract. Prices dipped 8 cents Friday to close at $40.88 per barrel, up from $39.43 at Monday's close. The posted price ended the week at $37.25 a barrel. Natural gas had a down week, as a 14-cent jump Monday was followed Wednesday by a 22-cent decline that Thursday's 14-cent rise could not overcome. Henry Hub prices on the NYMEX closed at $2.773 per MCF, down from $2.881 at Monday's close. Bloomberg reported that any glimmers of positivity in oil demand have been hamstrung by continued concerns about the rising wave of new COVID-19 cases, keeping oil prices in their narrow range. Chris Midgley, global head of analytics at S&P Global Platts, said during an online media briefing after the company's annual Energy Outlook meeting with clients that markets had gone through their summer equilibrium and began to wobble in late August amid rising virus cases. "We've heard a V-shaped recovery, W-shaped recovery, U-shaped, K-shaped. Now we're hearing about a J-shaped recovery, where the market is trying to escape but struggling to get out," he said. "We have headwinds. It's difficult for the market to get out of where it is now, and we see that lasting into next year." He said the market remains fragile, comparing it to a Jenga game, where it could remain intact as pieces are pulled out, but could collapse depending on the pieces removed. "It's in suspended animation with a slew of risks to prices and market balances," he said, listing risks such as more Libyan oil production coming to market. Midgley said that the Permian Basin's inventory of drilled, uncompleted wells is being whittled away. "DUCs can be and are economic," he said. "You only need $30 to complete them. There's a resilience there. The majority of operators are looking at $30 to $40 to complete DUCs, so it's not the current price. Frac crews are coming online faster than rigs, but they're still down 55%, having gone down as much as 80%. It's still a challenged industry. There's very little capital available, a lot of debt maturing over the next 2 years, credit lines used up. We're going to need to see prices recover to $45 to $50 territory. That's what we're looking towards in 2023. We're at 150 rigs now. We need 300 just to keep production flat. That's doubling today's rig count." Average price of gas in Midland is unchanged. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HurstMP.com. The average price of gas in Midland moved to within 11 cents of the state average, according to information released this week by AAA Texas. The organization reported that the average price for a gallon of regular unleaded was unchanged in Midland, $1.98, and Odessa, $2.06. The state average increased by a penny to $1.87. 2 weeks ago, the difference between the average in Midland and across the state was 15 cents. The average price in Midland remained the third highest in the state, behind Odessa and El Paso, which again took the top spot with an average of $2.07. Abilene was fourth with an average of $1.95. Drivers in the Red River community of Sherman Denison are paying the least at $1.71 per gallon. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. AAA Texas also reported on Thursday that Texas drivers have been paying below $2 a gallon for regular unleaded on average for 216 days, according to historical data from gasprices.aaa.com. That is the longest time since the statewide average hit $2 a gallon for the first time in 2005. COVID-19 concerns continue to keep gasoline demand well below last year, which has contributed to cheaper fuel prices since the spring, according to the organization. Across the region, other averages included $1.81 in Lubbock, no change compared to last week, $1.85 in Amarillo, an increase of 1 cent, and $1.86 in San Angelo, a decrease of 4 cents. The price dropped 4 cents in El Paso and increased 1 cent in Abilene. The average price in Midland is 49 cents lower than it was 1 year ago. The average price across the state is 41 cents lower. This week, El Paso, $2.07. Odessa, $2.06. Midland, $1.98. Abilene, $1.95. Texarkana, $1.92. Corpus Christi, $1.91. State average, $1.87. National average, $2.18. Last week, El Paso, $2.11. Odessa, $2.06. Midland, $1.98. Abilene, $1.94. Texarkana, $1.93. San Angelo, $1.90. State average, $1.86. National average, $2.19. 2 weeks ago, El Paso, $2.15. Odessa, $2.07. Midland, $2.01. Texarkana, $1.91. College Station, Bryan, $1.90. State average, $1.86. National average, $2.19. Source, AAA Texas. Obituaries. Clara Mae Crocker Harkins. Clara Mae Crocker Harkins, 82, passed away on October 14, 2020, in Midland, Texas. She was born June 27, 1938, in Weldon, Texas, to Clarence and Lily Mae Crocker. Times were hard, so the family moved several times for work, finally moving to Midland, Texas in 1953, where she met her future husband, Vernon R. Harkins, whom she married on January 30, 1954. Vernon and Clara were married for 66 happy years and had 5 great children. Clara was a loving and devoted wife and mother. After her family was raised, she became an expert porcelain doll maker as well as an artist, winning many blue ribbons for her creations. She was very talented and taught doll making classes so others could enjoy the craft. Clara was a beautiful person inside and out, with a lovely smile that brightened everywhere she went. She was her husband's joy. Clara's special name to her closest friends was Ladybug, which fit her perfectly. Her faith and belief in Jesus remained strong to her final moment of life. Clara is survived by her husband and daughters, Becky, Toma Michael, and husband Mark, Julie Cobb, and Joanna Elmore and husband Eddie, and numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her father and mother, a son, David Harkins, and a daughter, Brenda Saunders. Visitation will be on Saturday, October 17, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Church services will be at 2 p.m. October 18, 2020, at Seven Cities Church, 5110 West Illinois Avenue in Midland. Pastor Curtis Benninghoff will officiate. Burial will be at 3 p.m. on October 19 at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Face masks and social distancing is required. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 17th, 2020. Section A. City plans to appeal lawsuit. The City of Odessa has formally signaled its plans to appeal a judge's ruling that allows the Odessa American to proceed with its lawsuit, alleging the municipality has repeatedly violated state freedom of information laws. Lawyers representing the city filed a notice of appeal Thursday, noting in the filing they desire the matter to be taken up by the 11th Court of Appeals in Eastland. The notice, filed in the 161st State District Court, comes on the heels of a ruling Monday by visiting Judge Rodney Satterwhite, who denied the city's request to dismiss the newspaper's lawsuit because it claimed the judge did not have jurisdiction in the case. The formal notice now puts the lawsuit on hold, pending a ruling on the city's appeal by the appellate court. We expected this, and it is unfortunate, OA publisher Patrick Canty said. It is merely another delay tactic by the city that will add thousands of dollars to a costly legal bill taxpayers will have to pay, all because the city does not believe it has to follow open records laws that ensure the free flow of public information to those very same taxpayers. The newspaper filed its lawsuit in January, alleging the city has been violating the Texas Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, in a number of ways and on a consistent basis. After the 2019 Labor Day weekend mass shooting in Odessa, city officials began requiring the newspaper to file Freedom of Information requests for police reports and probable cause affidavits, routine crime reports that have always been considered public record, readily accessible by any citizen. The lawsuit alleges the city would delay the release of the reports, often for weeks or months, by referring each request to the state attorney general's office for review. And when reports ultimately were handed over to the newspaper, portions, sometimes large sections, were blacked out. The newspaper is asking in its lawsuit that a judge issue an order mandating the city to comply with the FOIA, which specifies the type of information the public is entitled to and without having to file a formal request to access. Multifaceted approach sparks UTPB enrollment. Inside its 6,102 students this year, University of Texas Permian Basin has seen huge jumps in some important categories like undergraduate students. The number of undergraduate, graduate, and dual credit students have all jumped. There has been a 66% jump in undergraduate students to 4,033 from last year. Graduate students have increased 20% this year to 1,238, and dual credit has risen 14% to 831, information from UTPB shows. Michael Chavez, Executive Director for Strategic Analytics, said most of the students, 1,415 or 23%, come from Ector County, and 838 or 14% are from Midland County. It drops to 4% from Harris County and 3% from El Paso. Bayer makes up 3% of UTPB students, while Tarrant, Cameron, Presidio, Dallas, and Travis are all at 2%. Other Texas counties send 30% of students to UTPB. UTPB President Sandra Woodley said 85% of UTPB students come from Texas, and there are 133 or 2% of students who are international, and 13% of the enrollment comes from other states in the country. Many of the international students are athletes, Woodley said. But Chavez pointed out that international students are in various programs like engineering and nursing. First-time, full-time, degree-seeking freshmen are up 54% from fall 2019, from 277 to 427. New graduate students, full-time, degree-seeking, rose 55% from 119 to 184, information from UTPB said. New full-time degree-seeking transfer students declined 25% to 208 from 227 last year. and new full and part-time degree-seeking undergraduate transfer students jumped 38% from 402 in 2019 to 554 in 2020. This year we have record numbers of first-time in college students. I think those are the efforts that are coordinated through enrollment management and through other resources in trying to recruit local area talent to educate our local area population so we can keep them here, Chavez said. I think that makes a difference. I think, as you can see, for the majority of our students who come from Ector and Midland County, we want to continue to grow that and enhance that, not only through our FTIC or first time in college students, but also through our transfer program through Midland College and Odessa College. Woodley said transfers are a little down this year, but we have quite a few initiatives in place to partner with both Midland College and Odessa College. We're almost finished with a data sharing agreement that allows us to get more information about the students who might be interested in transferring, Woodley said. Then we'll do a campaign to make sure that they understand about the financial aid opportunities that we have available and kind of working through the different programs. We're very grateful to both Steve Thomas, MC President, and Greg Williams, OC President, for working with us. She added that UTPB also has articulation agreements that have really been bolstered the last couple of years, and they have some innovative programs like OC2 UTPB on the education side and several in engineering with MC and OC. We've also been working with Midland College and Odessa College to think about how we may market to the people in the Permian Basin who aren't considering going to college at all. There are a lot of people here who would benefit from higher education, and many of them might be wise to start at the community college and transfer to UTPB. So we're trying to jointly recruit for all three of our colleges at the same time and to try to really set up programs and initiatives that focus on the needs of that particular student. Woodley said she began her education at a community college and she wouldn't have made it without that experience. She went all the way to a doctorate. Not everybody has to start as a freshman in the university to be successful. We would like to increase our freshman class, as of course we've been successful at doing, but that's not mutually exclusive to going out and trying to reach people who might very well be served to start at Midland College or Odessa College, Woodley added. Another initiative Woodley said they are ramping up is workforce training, certifications, and short courses in areas that students will be able to stack into an applied degree. Within the next year or so, Woodley said she's expecting an advanced manufacturing center to be launched as part of the business incubator program. One of our aspirations there is to be able to create these short courses and these workforce training courses for anyone, but also if the person decides they want to go on and get a baccalaureate degree, they won't lose that credit. It will count academically toward the degree, and we're early in our stages for this aspiration, but I think it's the wave of the future here, Woodley said. A lot of people will need to retool and reskill, and not all of them will need a full baccalaureate degree, but we want that option to be available to them, as we also serve the workforce needs here in the basin, she added. We've spent the last 3 years developing a comprehensive enrollment management plan and putting a staff together to make that happen. A lot of hard work from a lot of people. We partnered with Ruffalo Noel Levitz as a consulting firm. They've been helping us as well to reach out to students and to develop marketing plans and working on improving financial aid processes and accounting process and all the things that we have to improve, that we have to improve to make it easy for students to come, Woodley added. She acknowledged that it's been difficult to recruit students this year because of the pandemic, and they were expecting enrollment to be down, but it wasn't. You can't have orientations, and they can't really come to the campus. It's hard to see how the reach out is happening, So you have to get really creative and innovative. There's a lot of uncertainty, even this next year, in the work that we're doing and what we'll net, she said. Chief of Staff, Executive Director of Communication, Tatum Hubbard, said one of the things UTPB did really well pre-COVID was online learning. We know that graduate students often are in the workplace, so being able to be flexible and offer them courses that are on their schedule, Hubbard said. Woodley added that the UT system and UTPB are known for academic quality, so it does help them to compete for online students. Many courses, such as the Masters of Business Administration, Special Education, Education Leadership, and Public Administration, are popular online courses. Number one, our price is competitive, she said. We're still relatively modestly priced for those graduate and undergraduate online programs, but quality. You get a University of Texas education, so that really helps us to increase that. And our goal is to increase the number of online students while at the same time increasing the number of students who are traditionally on the campus. Chavez noted that accessibility is key, even in the local area, because people can't necessarily come to campus. Woodley said UTPB wants the full portfolio of students, whether it's online, non-traditional, or just out of high school. When she first arrived at UTPB, Woodley said she wanted to increase the number of traditional college students. We want to serve all of the students who could benefit from a UTPB education. It's both and in our role. So I think what had happened here is maybe there was an imbalance of effort towards the online and the dual credit and not enough attention to the on-campus traditional students. So we really ramped up the enrollment management work for all of it, but very much targeted on getting where we needed to be for the traditional students. Then we wanted to continue to grow the online. We're still thankful to have over 800 dual credit students. We'll grow that population as well for the service that it provides to them. We want to do all of it, Woodley said. Asked if they found that people decided to stay closer to home this year because of the pandemic, Woodley said they looked at that data, but it wasn't significantly different from before. We already serve mostly the Permian Basin and close surrounding areas, and maybe it is true that you have students who decided to stay close to home. Maybe that's part of the reason. I think that our first-time freshman numbers are up, but I think it's a number of things that led to that increase, she said. Woodley added that the new facilities that have come online also help attract students, such as the D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center and the new engineering building in Midland County. Hubbard said there has been a lot of positive word of mouth as well from students who have had positive experiences with the faculty and enjoy the smaller class size. You just have to change the perception of what your first choice university is. We want to be the first choice university for the people in this area who can get a great education here. We have top-notch programs here and a lot to be proud of. As we build that reputation, it will start to help us to achieve that doubling the numbers of people who get a degree here that we're seeking. She said they have 10 years of building and renovation to do to make sure every part of UTPB is at the level of the Performance Center and Engineering Building. We just need a little bit more money, Woodley said. Quick hits. Have you voted? Early voting continues through October 30th. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th, Room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 24th, 26th through 28th, 29th and 30th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 25th. Four other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 24th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 25th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. October 26th through 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th through 30th at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clements. So far in Ector County, 12,687 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. ECRW Luncheon. The Ector County Republican Women, ECRW, will host Mark and Patricia McCloskey of St. Louis at their luncheon set for 11:30 a.m. Wednesday in the Presidential Ballroom at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Tickets are going fast, and due to COVID-19, lunch tickets are required for entrance to the ballroom. They can be purchased at ecrwodessa.com or call or text to 432-557-4244. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes. Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio in Marfa, has scheduled Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes October 23rd through November 1st. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes will be available October 23rd on Bandcamp. Hearing Hidden Melodies will be available on Ballroom's website from October 23rd through November 1st. Chihuahuan Desert Birdscapes is a collection of new music and Hearing Hidden Melodies, an accompanying performative lecture centered on the study and appreciation of avian sound by musician and birder Rob Fry. For more information, call 432-729-3600, email info@ballroommarfa.org, or visit ballroommarfa.org. COVID-19 test kits for sale. In partnership with Phosphorus Diagnostics, United Family Pharmacies is now selling at-home COVID-19 testing kits. The samples collected for these tests will be saliva-based in lieu of the traditional nasal swab. Guests can typically expect results within 72 hours from the time the lab receives the test. For medical questionnaire or to request a test, visit scheduledtest.com. For more information, visit www.theunitedfamily.com. Pink the Basin. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Pink the Basin's annual luncheon and most of the large gathering third-party fundraisers have been canceled. Those events made up 90% of last year's annual income. To continue offering life-saving diagnostic breast cancer services, PTB, Pink the Basin, is requesting your support or participation in Pinking the Basin campaigns. Campaigns include free food in exchange for donations at local restaurants, sales at local businesses, walk, run, shopping, health and fitness events, and more. To view campaigns, donate, get help, or for more information, call 432-940-7465 or visit pinkthebasin.com. Winpack sets cinema under the stars. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center is hosting Cinema Under the Stars. The Halloween double feature is Hocus Pocus at 8 p.m. and at 11 p.m., the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Both are on October 29th. Free popcorn will be provided by Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Partial proceeds from the Rocky Horror Picture Show will benefit the Ham Hocks of Midland Community Theater. There will be a costume contest, Costumes must depict the movies being shown. Movie-themed specialty cocktails, free popcorn while supplies last, a photo booth, and prop bags available to purchase for use during the Rocky Horror screening. For additional guidelines, visit wagnernoll.com. Face masks that cover your nose and mouth are required to be worn at all times while in the venue for guests ages 10 or older, unless you are actively eating or drinking. Tickets for Cinema Under the Stars are $5, and each movie will be sold separately with assigned seating to allow for social distancing. You can purchase tickets for each movie screening, and will have to choose your seats each time, meaning it will be first come, first served. And having the same seats for each movie is not guaranteed. Webinar explores loneliness and mindful meditation. COVID-19 has everyone isolating a little more these days. For some, isolation is hard and can lead to loneliness, but for others, the loneliness didn't arrive with the pandemic. The Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Family and Community Health Unit's Texas Military Program is offering a webinar that can help individuals learn more about mindfulness meditation to combat loneliness. Surmounting Social Isolation and Loneliness, Mindfulness Meditation, will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. October 21st. The program is free and open to the public. Attendees must first RSVP in advance and then check email for instructions to join the session. This session explores the differences between social isolation and loneliness, the potential risks to our personal and relational health, and provides tips for how to effectively cope and manage. Andy Crocker, AgriLife Extension Statewide Program Specialist, is gerontology and specialist in gerontology and health, Amarillo, and Lakshmi Mahadevan, PhD, AgriLife Extension Specialist, Special Populations, College Station, will be the presenters. The program offers continuing education credits for social workers, licensed professional counselors, licensed marriage and family therapists, case managers, and board-certified patient advocates. Local news roundup. 84th and 85th COVID-19 related deaths reported. Medical Center Health System is reporting two more COVID-19 related deaths. The first patient, a 95-year-old female, died early Friday morning. The second patient, a 70-year-old female, died Friday afternoon. The first patient was a resident of Fort Stockton and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital October 5th. The second patient was a resident of Odessa and was admitted October 2nd. Both patients had pre-existing conditions and both families have been notified. MCH COVID numbers. Total COVID numbers for Medical Center Health System, along with the daily COVID in-house census as of 1:30 p.m. 1,696 positives, 35 COVID patients in-house, 23 on 4 central COVID isolation floor, 12 in CCU, 8 on vents. The COVID patient list includes one from Buena Vida Nursing and Rehabilitation in Odessa, one from Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation in Odessa, 3 from Focused Care Odessa, 2 from Big Spring, 2 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Kermit, 1 from McCamey, 1 from Midland, and 1 from Presidio. 13 of 35 COVID patients in-house are from nursing homes or out-of-county transfers. 6,094 negatives, 62 pending, no PUIs, patients under investigation in-house. These are patients who have been tested for COVID and are waiting for results. Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said in a text message, 7,852 total tested. ECISD to announce internet plan. Ector County ISD is committed to bridging the digital divide in the community and is exploring multiple avenues for doing so. Tuesday, school district leaders will host a press conference announcing a new project that will make ECISD the first school district in the United States to use this innovative technology to deliver high-speed internet service to its students. The announcement is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. Tuesday in a location to be announced. Obituaries for Saturday, October 17th. L.J. Sunny Holder. Graham. L.J. Sunny Holder passed away October 14th. He was born March 29th, 1928 in Archer City, the fifth of 10 children. He married Juanel in 1948. He is preceded in death by his wife Juanel, parents Lonnie J. and Loie B. Holder, sisters Betty Jo Holder, Doris Marie Holder, Janelle Holder Owen, Mary Holder Hodge, Lorraine Holder Linville, and Patsy Lou Holder, brother Don Paul Holder, and two granddaughters. He is survived by his sons, Ronald Holder, Royce Holder of Odessa, and Rodney Holder of Houston, brothers Jerry Holder and Jimmy Holder of Weatherford, one grandson, two granddaughters, five great-grandchildren, and multiple nieces and nephews. Visitation was held Saturday, October 17th at McMillan's Satterwhite Funeral Home in Graham. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Graveside services will be held Monday, October 19th at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Eliasville Baptist Church in Eliasville, Texas. Janet Elaine Whittemore Holly. Janet Elaine Whittemore Holly, 65, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, October 13th. She was born October 30th, 1954, in Odessa, to Doyle Ray Whittemore and Mariana Goodman. Surviving her are her mother, Mariana Whittemore, daughters Dawn Kirby and husband Jamie, and Laura Tomlinson and husband Scott, brothers Mike Whittemore and wife Debbie, and Billy Whittemore and wife Jean, a niece and a nephew, five grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. She was preceded in death by her father, Doyle Ray Whittemore. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, October 19th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notice. John Duncan Jensen. Odessan John Duncan Jensen, 88, died Tuesday, October 13th. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, October 20th at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading this Midland Reporter telegram for Sunday, October 18th, 2020. Front page. Details about protests surrounding China AIDS founder by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E, at MRT.com. Details reported about the protests surrounding Pastor Bob Thu have been scattered and at times contradictory since demonstrators began picketing in front of his Polo Park home 2 weeks ago. Here's a breakdown of everything that's known about the protests and the facts that have been released by the city. Who is Bob Thu? Thu is the founder of Midland-based nonprofit China Aid, which provides legal assistance to Christians who have been arrested in China, where religious and ethnic minorities face persecution. He and his wife fled China in the 1990s and received political asylum in the U.S. He founded China Aid in 2002 and has since served as a liaison for several Chinese citizens seeking asylum in the U.S., testifying before legislators on their behalf. Who are the protesters? The protesters appear to be followers of Chinese businessman Miles Guo, who fled China after he was charged with bribery and other crimes and is seeking asylum in the U.S. Guo runs the GTV Media Group, which markets itself as a news organization exposing corruption within the Chinese government. However, Guo's status as a whistleblower has come under scrutiny, and he is currently the subject of a federal fraud investigation. Some have accused the protesters of being paid by Guo to harass Thu, though no evidence has been released that they are paid protesters, and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said Thursday that the Midland Police Department has not been able to determine if anyone is funding their travel or hotel expenses. Payton also said Thursday that the protesters do not appear to be communists, despite news reports that have labeled them as members of the Chinese Communist Party. He said Thu is being targeted by the CCP, but the protesters appear to be anti-communists who have been misled by Guo. Where are the protesters from? Although they repeatedly declined to provide reporters with their names or information on where they travel from, some information on the protesters could be obtained through their record, through public records, after three were arrested last week. The three were arrested by MPD for jaywalking, are from Houston metro area. They appear to be living normal lives in Texas with spouses, children, and legitimate businesses. They all moved to Texas after living in other states and have been in the U.S. for several years. The Reporter Telegram is not publishing their names because they were arrested on misdemeanor jaywalking charges and there isn't any evidence they are affiliated with the CCP. Are the protesters putting Midlanders in danger? Payton said Thursday the protests are a nuisance, but there's no reason to believe the protesters intend to hurt anyone. Their demonstrations have stayed peaceful, and although one protester was arrested early on for trespassing, there haven't been any instances of trespassing since. Has Thu received death threats? The FBI and CIA are investigating alleged threats against Thu's life, but Payton said Thursday the threats do not appear to be linked to the protesters. Guo has posted videos on GTV's social media pages describing a global kill cheaters campaign against several people, including Thu, he claims are working with the CCP. Those appear to be what has led to concern for Thu's safety and he and his family being placed in protective custody. But again, although the protesters seem to have been influenced by allegations that have come from Guo, there's no evidence the protesters are working for Guo and no evidence they may be dangerous. What are the allegations against Thu? Guo has posted several allegations on GTV's website, including accusing Thu of working with the CCP to spy on Americans. He has also said Thu is a fake priest and the leader of a human trafficking ring. There's no evidence to support any of these claims, and the credibility of Guo's accusations against those he claims are part of corruption against the Chinese government have been repeatedly called into question by news outlets going back several years. Why hasn't Guo been arrested for the threats against Thu and others? Payton said Thursday he couldn't comment on the status of the federal investigations into the threats against Thu. It is likely the U.S. government would opt to extradite Guo to China, where he's facing several criminal charges. How likely it is that Guo will be extradited remains to be seen, because he is well connected among American politicians. Former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon is a partner of GTV and friend of Guo's. Bannon was living on one of Guo's yachts when he was arrested recently and charged in the Build the Wall scheme. and former U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions threatened to resign in 2017 if President Trump's administration sent Guo back to China. Although those officials are no longer with the administration, and several politicians, including Ted Cruz and Mike Conaway, have denounced Guo's actions, it's impossible to know how deep Guo's connections run. How long are the protests going to last? The city hasn't given a clear answer to how long Midlanders should expect the protests to last. Peyton said Thursday information they've received indicates the protesters will be leaving soon. If the protests continue much longer, Peyton said the city will explore other ways they might be able to remove the protesters without violating their constitutional rights to freedom of speech. Lawsuit raises questions about actions of MISD PD district officials. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. A 31-page lawsuit brought by a former Abel Hanger junior high school teacher and her husband gives a glimpse into a school district's police force that they say violated the rights of their family, including a 14-year-old girl taken from her home and not allowed to make contact with her parents. The lawsuit was filed Friday in federal court and focuses on the actions of a pair of Midland ISD police officers, Alexandra Weaver and Kevin Bruner, and the decisions of the parents claimed they made on October 26, 2018. The suit also names MISD as a defendant. Included in the complaint are comments about the lack of training on the district's part and the decisions made by other MISD leaders, including those at Abel Junior High at the time. The lawsuit alleges violations of the 4th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. The lawsuit also states they further bring forth state claims pursuant to the common law claims of breach of contract, defamation, and invasion of privacy. What happened? Based on a previous criminal case, the lawsuit itself and other reporting shows that the father was serving overseas as part of the Mississippi Army National Guard, and the mother, on the evening of October 25th, was flying overseas to meet with a potential employer in Kuwait. One of their children, a 14-year-old girl, was being homeschooled, and the other, a 12-year-old boy, was attending Abel Junior High, where his mother was a special ed behavior teacher. On the day in question, a person responsible for taking the 12-year-old to school was sick and had someone else fill in. That person, though, had also contacted Weaver about the student needing a ride, and that call turned into an investigation of the two children and their welfare. The mother, Megan McMurray, had made arrangements with neighbors who had responsibility for the children in their absence. However, even though the one child was in a class at Abel on that day, according to the lawsuit, MISD police officers investigated the welfare of the children and found the 14-year-old who was participating in homeschooling. They took the 14-year-old back to Abel Junior High, where she was held and not allowed to contact her father about the situation. According to the lawsuit, MISD police and school officials did not contact the children's father, Adam McMurray, to inform him that one child was detained at the school and that police officers would be interviewing the younger child. Not until several hours after the officers first seized the daughter did they allow her to call her father. The lawsuit states that Bruner filed two separate affidavits for probable cause to initiate arrest warrants for Megan McMurray for abandoning and endangering her children. She turned herself in on December 6th, spent 19 hours in jail, and later was acquitted by the Midland County jury. The complaint provides details into the actions of the officers as told by the McMurray family, others involved in caring for their children at the time, the interaction of Child Protective Services, and courtroom testimony. The complaint also questions why MISD went to the family's apartment when the one child enrolled in MISD was in class and the child they were inquiring about did not attend an MISD school. It describes what Megan and Adam McMurray say were actions by district officials that kept their children from being able to contact their father, the search of the family's apartment, and the lack of explanation of the rights the daughter had when the police showed up at the apartment on that October day. It also addresses how the district handled Megan McMurray's employment situation, comments made by Weaver that created unreasonable publicity of an investigation about Megan McMurray, the decision by Midland ISD police to continue its investigation and push for charges was information they say was inaccurate and incomplete. The lawsuit also provides the McMurray's claim how the family's rights were violated. More details from the lawsuit are the document was filed in U.S. District Court, Western District of Texas, Midland Division, and the plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial for all issues in the matter. MISD completely turned my life and the lives of my family, entire family, upside down for no reason. It is time for them to be held accountable for their actions so this doesn't ever happen to another family. Megan McMurray. Imagine my shock and feelings of helplessness when my daughter contacted me on October 26th via text message telling me she was scared and that the police were at our apartment. My first thought were of my wife, Megan's safety. I texted my daughter back to see what was going on and waited for her response. It was taking a while for her to respond, but when she did, she told me that the police wouldn't allow her to text or call me. When I received this message from my daughter, I was outraged because the people who are supposed to trust, we are supposed to trust to protect and serve, were telling my daughter that she couldn't talk to me. Adam McMurray, in a statement offered to the Reporter-Telegram.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.